So welcome to No Shame, episode 24. We've been excited to this since this man left. We've been excited to get him back in here and pick his brains. I would say the modern day Tom Crean in this studio, that's where he is. We have Damien on. So Damien done the Atlantic Row single-handedly. If you haven't checked out the podcast before that, not single-handedly, you used both hands, didn't you?
Yeah, I tried.
If you haven't checked out the podcast before that and his preparation before it, do and then watch this one. That's what we would do. So awesome. You're back. You made it back.
That's I'm back. Said. I'm on solid ground.
First thing you said when I came in, I'm alive, Paddy.
Yeah. There was, I think more people were more worried about me surviving than I was about myself surviving, you know, but I never had any kind of, I never had any huge anxious moments about kind of not surviving, but I just kind of, I throw that one out there anyway, you know, people like it, you know, crowd pleaser, I'm alive.
Yeah, that's always a good one, isn't it? You had that balls like a Bengali tiger, man, to have no moments where you're like, you're not scared of dying at that situation. I would have been, like, I was looking at the sea yesterday off a pier down by Bullock Harbour, and I was a little bit nervous, you know what I mean? The sea makes me really nervous to be out in the middle of nowhere and be at the mercy of it, you know, like, That has to be crazy. But preparation, instead of even going into all the thing, yeah, I know it got delayed, didn't it? The race got delayed.
Couple of days delayed, yeah. We were meant to go on the 12th, ended up going on the 14th. we just had it was really windy in La Gomera, you know. So the wind, La Gomera is quite a mountainous island, tiny but mountainous. So the wind was kind of sweeping over the mountain and down into the harbour. And it would have basically would have pushed us, especially us solos who didn't have the power to get away, would have pushed us kind of into ferry channels and all sorts of stuff. So they just made the smart decision to just delay it for, well, you know, initially it was just a momentarily delay, but then it ended up in 2 days, just for safety aspects, you know. Not only that, but you know, it just those conditions around the island would have caused boats to capsize really early, so it was probably the right thing to do. I knew myself by the way, looking at the way we had to get out of the harbour, that you know I wouldn't have even had the power to kind of row through that wind without getting pushed into where the ferries were coming in. So yeah, I was very happy to, or I was kind of relieved that they decided to pull it off, even though some of the four-man boats were pretty pissed off because they felt that was an advantage that they had, you know, and they had trained in those conditions, so they wanted to go, but the race organizers decided just to leave it until it calmed a little bit.
So you're standing there on the pier and I'd say like that's kind of like nearly walking to the door for a fight or something like that, and then saying, no, actually that's actually happened to me.
Yeah.
I warmed up, I walked to the door, and then a generator burst or something like that, and I had to go back and do an hour later, and it's like shit, because the second preparation sometimes is not as good as the first initial, you know. But so you're standing on the pier in 2 days, you're relieved, obviously, you were saying.
Yeah.
You get to eat more as well.
It was a bit strange, because I can't explain how kind of all over the shop I was in the couple of days running up to it. I'd never experienced that sort of state. Like, I was really difficult to keep concentration in conversations just like this, because my mind would just keep wandering to what was ahead, you know. I just felt really unusual, I suppose, is the best description of it, you know. And then when it was kind of taken away from us and delayed 2 days, I don't know, it just gave me a bit of a time to process things a bit more, and I was much more comfortable, or I felt more ready to go 2 days later than I did 2 days before. So, you know, I could have never foreseen that, but it's just the way it worked out, you know.
Yeah, that's like, I'd say that them 2 extra days as well, the idea of like, because you kind of get to walk to the boat, you get to brace yourself, you get to, is it going to happen, is it not going to happen, and then you actually get 2 more extra days to, because if you go out, I'd say starting that race in the wrong frame of mind, even now more, you're probably thinking that would have been a bad, bad situation.
Oh, you'd be in big, big trouble, man, like, because, you know, there's so many unknowns, you know, and you have to be open to what's going to come at you, you know. So I felt very ready mentally and physically for that, and I needed to be, because the way things went on day one, if I hadn't been in a really good, strong state of mind and ready to go, I basically, I, you know, well, who knows, but it would have made it much more difficult, maybe even to the point of like not even getting going, you know what I mean, or not even kind of pushing through all those problems I had on day one.
That's what I'm saying, the weak mind, like not even a weak mind, but like an exhausted mind, even a tired mind,
yeah,
would have been a hard one to start and then stay with.
Yeah, no, because, well, like you said, then, you know, even if you're going through those kind of, or if you are tired and a little bit, if your energy is low, yeah, you're just going to go into that weak place really quickly and negative place, and yeah, I imagine it'd be very, very difficult to get out of that. Whereas even though I went into a real negative place because of what I went through and with the problems, I was able to kind of process that really quickly because I was ready for it, you know. Not ready at day one. I thought it would come in the middle of the Atlantic,
yeah,
you know.
Not ready
but,
at day one.
Yeah, I processed it real quickly and then just kind of got to work on the things I could do and I could control, you know, and then got away from land eventually.
Did you feel like the nation got behind you as well? Because like I know for a fact that when you were leaving, I was a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
I was a little bit nervous, and I remember even my girlfriend got like kind of into it, and I said, did you see Old Stock's Instagram today and stuff like that? Like, and like your Instagram was great, Jordan. It was absolutely amazing. There was times where I wanted to just join you out there, you know what I mean? I'd be like, what would Old Stock do? You know what I mean? And so the day you were taking off, so that's the day, that has to be a great buzz on that pier. It looked amazing. Like, it looked like I said, it was kids down. You are like absolute heroes leaving for a voyage that only kids could dream of.
And
I say you still are kids inside as well, because you're getting ready to go on a big mad, the crazy adventure.
Crazy adventure.
You know it's going to be hard. You know there's going to be days you want to quit, you know. But that's the fun of it.
Yeah. Like,
what's that day like?
Incredible day. From, you know, you meet at about 7:45, they give us your last bit of prep, or
7:45
in the morning. Yeah.
Jesus.
And then you
that would have beat me. We're not going, lads,
disqualified.
Imagine that, 7:45, I would have to stay up.
Yeah, I suppose they brief us on what the weather is doing and what they think it's going to do for the next couple of days, and then you know, we're all go, it's the official start, everyone walks down together, and then you know, there's all the kind of, basically there was 25 boats this year, so like there was a lot of hugging going on and a lot of good lucks and a lot of bit of last minute advice, and people are asking you to write things in their little books that they have, you know, I didn't have one, but you know, people were saying, will you write just something
that's
for
mad.
Us
Tom Crean didn't have one of them logs. Same.
He didn't either. No,
he didn't.
Right, yeah,
that's why it's the untold story.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, never thought of that, man. It must be something with us Irish,
told
like, you know.
Yeah. Look out writing that down. Way out of that, will you?
Yeah.
For pregnant women.
In coffee shops.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the crowd starts to gather, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of TV cameras buzzing around the place and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, you see everyone kind of saying goodbye to their parents. And I was the last boat to leave. And everyone left in kind of 5 to 10, 5 minute intervals. So I used to see, I sat there for 3 hours waiting to go, and I seen every other boat pull out, like, you know.
I say, get over it. After about an hour, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Can we accelerate this?
Like, watching every single leaving.
Sick of waiting around, like, you know. I just seen everyone going, and then kind of my plan was to try and, you know, catch them, like, you know, as quickly as possible.
I was watching on the map, because, and that was great as well.
Yeah,
like I only figured that out, like, we can watch them.
Yeah.
I was weird when I first heard of it, like Truman Show watching, you know what I mean? That was great, because you could see us all together, and there was actually a time where I got the wrong boat at the start. And I was watching the wrong boat for a second.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, like a dope. Cheering on the wrong boat. Oh, I'll take them back.
Well, you couldn't miss me after a while, because I was right at the back. But
front,
so
whatever which way you look at,
well,
the direction you're
exactly,
going.
Exactly. Yeah. just kind of, and I suppose there's the whole like emotion around, and the whole kind of, I don't know, relief of starting something that you've planned for so long, you've put every kind of ounce of yourself into, like, you know, for 18 months, and not only that, then you've got like kind of 12 years of dreaming about it as well, you know. So there's
a crazy
enormous
dream to have.
Spike.
What a crazy thing to take
up. I think dreams should be crazy though, right?
Like 100%.
Yeah, and if you can follow through in them like that, like I remember pulling away that first, I actually have the first half an hour on my GoPro, and I'd be like shouting at the top of my lungs, like just screaming, and then I'd be crying, and then I'd be screaming again. I was like, what is fucking wrong with you? Like, but I couldn't, I can't explain it. Like, you know, exactly. It's just all that coming out of you. Because the, you know, you finally achieved what you wanted to do.
Turned over the time, or at least everything now is tracked in history. Every that journey.
Yeah.
Or you think of things like that as well. Like, that's a crazy frame of mind.
Crazy, like just rolling along and tears, and then
like a madman.
Yeah. there was times when I was out there during the whole journey, and I was like, if anyone saw this, like if they were watching, like you could be, you know, institutionalized, like the behavior is going on. But that's very liberating at the same time. There's obviously parts of us deep down that just need to get out in some fashion. I mean, you need to be vented or aired, and I was just letting them come. Like, I wasn't
every
trying
Saturday
to
night in Dublin Temple Bar.
Right, yeah.
They're doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's one way of
doing
it.
Probably safer,
you know,
in the Atlantic Ocean now. Yeah. Safe for everybody else, but I'm pretty sure. But there is kind of like that wildness in it, especially Irish people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because so I can nearly picture you on that boat.
Yeah.
Screaming.
The best way I can describe it is savage. Like, there's a savage part to me that just needs to come out, and it used to be able to come out in rugby, and now it doesn't have that kind of therapy or vent. So now I find ways to let it out, you know, and that's what was happening out there. Like, it was just, it's just at times, you know, could have been described as madness, but in a good way, you
that's
know.
That's
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like pure alive madness. Mm,
Daddy,
I'm slightly jealous, man. Because I know the feel. That's kind of like the feeling. I was at an amateur show, MMA show, the weekend, and you can see like quite a lot of guys fighting for the first time and stuff like that. So a lot of training would have went into it. So there's kind of when if they win or whatever, you can see them moments happening. And some people are like, it's only an amateur fight, but to them it's a year, it's a process, it means so much, you know what I mean? And you can see it rolling out of my saying there.
And they've pushed past that fear, like, you know, because there's so many unknowns. Fight they've pushed past it, and they've like the relief of doing that, or the, you know, they finally kind of achieve something that they put so much themselves into. And I can completely relate to that.
Do you think that's kind of your body kind of like maybe celebrating itself, that like it's alive? Like, I remember someone said to me before, like, your body's prepared for death in situations that you don't know. Like, you know that it's not going to be death because it's a sport in MMA, but for your case, like, your body is kind of prepared, and because subconsciously it's worried that, like, it knows that things can go wrong. And even though your human brain will calm it down, but there's no doubt, like, you're bringing a chimp onto that board there, you know, like, and it's I think that probably be the heart. The chimp and the human on the board, you know what I mean? So you kind of got to calm him down and look after him.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, there was times out there where, like, I just kind of, you know, you have to be so in control and so vigilant and so safety conscious, because, like, the Atlantic is just this monster. Like, I mean, that can just, at any stage, you just feel so vulnerable that, like, she can just kind of, you know, she can just play up and she can do what she wants with you, you know. So you have to be in control, but there's times where you just, like, you just feel like just letting that control go as well, you know, and just letting out whatever the hell you've been bottling up, or whatever the hell needs to be kind of aired and vented. And, I don't know if it's a balance or what it is, but just being aware that party is in there, and not to kind of, you know, not to be afraid to let it out.
So the first day there, so you've kind of got that big, huge, the human mode of it comes back in, where you've got that kind of that lunacy in the first day, all the adrenaline, all of that. I call it the first 2 minutes, that like mad chemicals got flowing through your body, and then they all die off, and then the wind hits you, didn't it? And they're going to remember being devastated for you that day. I could just imagine the effort of what you had put in, especially when your first day digging in. And then you got
I had all that, like, obviously I had all that kind of what I just explained, the emotion of finally, that was an achievement just getting started, you know. So I had all that emotion, and then I had all the physical problems, so my heels blistered, my hand, all the calluses on my hands tore off. We were talking about 6 or 7 hours rowing now at this stage, and then I had these weird lower body, like all the muscle groups in my lower body were in this severe cramping, like, so hammies, calves and quads, they were just like bouncing around like a heartbeat, you know. I was like, what the fuck? I had that, and then I had the seasickness. So I was rocked a little bit by that, because like my body and my physical preparation is my rock and my anchor, and I can always rely on it. And even when everything's going wrong, you know, you have the stability of that strength. And then when that was taken away from me, I was a little bit shook is the best word. And then I started getting, we started, the wind shifted and we got this localized low pressure system. So that meant basically instead of having winds blowing us out away from the island, they were now blowing us back to the island. So the decision I decided to make after all, like when I was like, well, this, like I'm going like 0.3 or 0.4 of a knot into this wind, which is hardly anything. I mean, crawling across the floor.
You're at the same spot.
Exactly. Like. And I'm expending all this energy that I don't really have, obviously, or my body. So I was like, well, if I take an hour of sleep, okay, I'll get blown back a little bit, but like it might help me a lot in the grander scheme of things, just recover and get a bit of, you know, give your body a chance to kind of sort itself out. So I said I'd go 45 minutes to an hour of sleep and then I'll get back on the oars. So I had gone back a mile. So it kind of wasn't unexpected, but then, so I felt a bit better. So I rode up that kind of mile that I lost. Same point on the GPS. I still remember it was 42.2 kilometers to my next waypoint. So I said, right, now what I'll do is about 1 o'clock, midnight, 1 o'clock. I said, put out the sea anchor or the power anchor, which is meant to hold me in place. It's like an anchor when you, it's too deep to use a ground anchor. So it's just a parachute that sits out the front of the boat and holds about 2 tons of water in it and stops getting blown back. So I said, I'll put that out and I'll go for a night's sleep.
So that goes into the water?
Yeah, it goes under the water, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 meters. And
it's more of a weight that stops you from getting
exactly,
dragged.
Exactly, yeah. Really? So the big reason for bringing that is when you're faced with storms in the mid-Atlantic, or what you presume will be the mid-Atlantic, you know, instead of getting blown back tens of miles or even more, that'll hold you in place, you know, or you get blown back a little bit, but not, you know, you won't lose all that valuable ground. So I'm going to bed kind of in the knowledge that, you know, I'll get up and I'll be in the same spot, and then at least I'll have rested up 5 or 6 hours, and then I'll just row then the next day, you know. So I get up around 5 in the morning, still dark, and I see that I've been blown back a mile and a half on the GPS. I'm like, what the fuck? So I was completely shook me, like, you know, because of course what I'm thinking at this stage is, so when I'm faced with storms, like if this thing isn't working, I'm just going to be blown back. Like I'm going to lose so much ground later on in this thing, and how hard is that going to be psychologically?
I was kind of thinking that, like when that did happen the first time, I remember thinking to myself, shit, like.
Yeah.
I was sitting there drinking a cup of tea in my nice warm house. It's kind of a hard time now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I was thinking, every time you fall asleep, and I was thinking, like, well, you're obviously going to get blown back a little bit.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I was really in a bad place at that stage, with everything
mentally,
that had gone
that
on.
Has to be, like, to achieve something, and then to have something to just, like, not something, just take it away from you.
Yeah.
That can be, that like, the power, of the, like I said, the helpless feeling kind of creeps in, quick, I'd say.
Yeah, like, I'm questioning everything at this stage. Firstly, my body. Secondly, my state, psychological state. And third, the technical side of putting out the power anchor. Did I do it wrong, or what the hell was going on? So anyway, there's a lot of faff involved in the power anchor, because it goes out 90 meters. There's 90 meters of rope attached to it. So you have to, and then there's 115 meters of retrieval line. So you have to pull in the 115 meters. So I'm leaning over the boat, pulling that in for, you know, a few minutes, and then I pull in the power anchor eventually and get it all stored. So in that time, about 45 minutes to do that, I'm pushed back another half a mile. So now I'm like, I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I feel I'm out of the race. I'm pretty low. And, you know, I've got a decision to make. Like, do I just kind of sit here and feel sorry for myself, and or do I, like, control what I can control? And so that's one of my strengths. I feel like I process that bad shit happening real quickly, probably through just doing it lots in sport or whatever,
probably,
you know.
Probably good that happened there as well.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of set me up a little bit. I was like, things can't get much worse than this anyway,
like,
you
it's
know.
It's kind of like, it gave you a little sign of, are you ready to pass through the door? And,
yeah.
And this is probably what's, like, what you're going to be dealing with on the way.
So I think it was around 6 at this stage, or maybe a little bit more, and I just rode, and I rode for 7 hours without stopping, and then I made that video that you talked about. But
lots of talking to yourself.
Yeah, lots of talking, lots think of questioning, lots bullying. Of yeah just trying to fucking cajole yourself into, you know, just getting to work and staying at work, you know, and doing what you can do. But, you know, there was 2 other solos in my in the exact same position as I was, and getting blown back, and you know, one of us rode for 7 hours without stopping, and the other two didn't row for 7 hours and one of us got across and the other two didn't, you know. So it just shows you that, you know, when you can, when you just...
And that boat's yours.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other two solos didn't get past that point?
No, they never got going. They got pulled in after day three and day four. Yeah, pulled back. Imagine how soul destroying that was for them. Like I feel like really sorry for them, but I just making a point, you know, about, you know, controlling what you can control, but like at the same time.
But that's a grey kind of 100%. Like you can either sit in your boat and you can kind of like, well, do you know what, this is too tough for me.
Yeah, feel sorry for yourself.
You can literally bully yourself and talk yourself and fight yourself through it.
Yeah,
I had that feeling about you going out there. I just knew that. Like he'll have to be lifted off that boat. Yeah, you know what I mean, in a way.
Yeah. And I was telling myself that, like, you know, we can kind of create all sorts of patterns in our head. Like, and I was telling myself for a long time, like, that nothing was going to stop me rowing across the Atlantic. And I just repeated to myself. And you know, when you're in situations like that, you come back to that foundation of that kind of mantra you've been saying to yourself, and you go, oh yeah, nothing is going to stop me, and you just get to work, you know. So, and I said it to myself nearly most days out there, you know, because I needed to, you know, because it's just a place where you get negative real quickly because of the hardship of it all, the physical hardship and the time, you know. The time is a big element, how much time is left, and you're always thinking about numbers like days and mileage and blah blah blah. So
and next point, because you're always chasing the carrot, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly idea, that. Like, you always have a point you're trying to get to, so you're like trying to, you know, you're in your head going, how long am I going to get there? And if I do this, and it doesn't really matter. Just roll.
Yeah,
you know,
drop.
Concentrate on the.
That's a crazy bloody human thing, I'd say. Yeah, yeah, like that's nearly like life laid out in a line. Like
it is.
Just, you're constantly chasing that next. Next point of checkpoint, and how far were they coming? Were they coming within day, like 5 days, or what was the days of the checkpoints?
So it depended, actually. If you like that first one I told you about was like only about 50 miles. The first we called them waypoints. So that was just to get clear of the furthest Canary Island west, which is called El Hierro. And then I had another one, probably 100 miles. But then, like, I had a weather router who's giving me my waypoints. So basically, he's looking at like 8 different weather system, what do they call them, maps or whatever, and he's trying to decipher what the weather's doing and how best for me to use it. So he's given me daily emails for kind of 5-day weather forecasts, and he gives me my waypoints. So he gave me one then, and it was like 1300 miles. So I was like, right. So you kind of go, well, listen, you know, you kind of forget then about, like, it's not as if it's 50 miles and you're kind of always, you kind of just forget like about it, and you kind of go, I'll deal with it when I'm in like 200 or 300 miles.
I do want to give maps all the time. What's my next turn off? You know, and it's 11 kilometers. I'm making that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's a game.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's a game in your head.
1,300 kilometers.
So
had to
I was
be
like 1,300 nautical miles. I was like, right, yeah, I'll just row for, you know, the next 2 weeks, and then yeah, I'll see how close I am to that. You know,
that's yeah. But maybe just a straight line as well. That like you knew that, like I say, if you reach that 1,300 mile mark, when you look up, you're like, right, I'm in here.
Yeah,
now, you know what I mean. And,
yeah,
and whatever's happens in between, that if I get past this point and get to here, no matter what.
Exactly.
I'm in the middle of the ocean.
And then you kind of just dial it down to the daily kind of stuff. Then you're like, well, you know, I'm the only one who can see what the weather is doing around here. So I just try and orientate the stern or the back of the boat with perfectly downwind and down waves, like so. So then I'm making the most of the conditions, you know, those localized conditions. So, and I don't even really care if I'm going like northwest or southwest or south southwest or east, you know. I care if I'm going east. So, and then, you know, you kind of just keep a loose eye on the mileage you're doing and how much closer you're getting to your waypoint.
So the food, say the food situation, like, when did you realise, when did it get to a stage where you're like, man, I cannot wait to eat a big fat burger? Or like, was that a day?
Really early, yeah. Really, really early.
Because you were eating that, like astronaut food, is it?
Yeah, kind of like dehydrated meals, like, so it's stuff you just add, or freeze dried. You just add water to it. So I brought a quite a big variety of stuff, so it kept me a little bit interested. But there was some meals I basically... realized really early were mistakes. Like I brought this pad thai, and I ate it twice in the first 2 days, and then I think I still have about 20 packets of it left. I mean, I'd pull it out and I'd literally be repulsed by the sight of the packet, you know. I just throw it into a different locker, get that out of my sight. Like,
looks terrible, does it, as well?
Yeah, like, it's not great at all. God almighty. And, I don't know, it's just, you want real neutral kind of food, and then, you know, maybe just a bit of salt and pepper spiced in it, or... But anything with any sort of kind of curry or spice or anything like that, for me anyway, it was a no go. So the pad Thai was a bad decision. But
Irish man stuck out in the Atlantic after a bad pad Thai.
Yeah, it's an unusual combination. Yeah.
That's where most of the scream was coming from, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah,
it's like, Jesus, there's Damien. How do you know? It's like, look, there's an oil tanker in the water. It's like, you know, it's like that. But like, the food thing, that would have definitely got me. Like, for a few days, like, the idea of not, like, even if you had, like, if you looked at what you're eating, you know that that's what you're going to be eating for the next little while, and the taste of stuff. And
I have no idea how people bring just the one meal, or the one meal for each meal. If you get me, like, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the same thing. Like, I just couldn't.
People do it.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, how could you just eat the one thing? I mean, like, any day I had a bit of a change up, because, you know, I bought more of some stuff than others. So, like, if I ate 3 or 4 of the same breakfast in 4 days and then I had a change, it was a huge boost to my morale.
Food is a big thing that you can use as a tool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, nothing to do with, like, the Atlantic Ocean, but cutting weight, sometimes I'd put a chocolate bar in the fridge,
yeah,
and I would go training all day that day, and that chocolate bar, like, and it wouldn't be like a Mars bar. It'd be a Joe Davy, like a nutrient bar. But these things are, it's fudge. I'll get you one, right?
Right, yeah.
Change your life.
Okay.
Change your life. And I used to put a little bit of microwave, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Have a cup of tea, and I'd eat this bar sometimes with like cut a knife and have it.
Really? Yeah.
Drink tea and
savor it. I can imagine, man. Slushing around in your mouth.
I once got caught behind the curtain eating a tea cake, making like, true story of it. I got caught behind the corn, middle of the night. I was like, there was a tea cake on the table. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get that.
Couldn't think of anything else.
Sleep in the bed, I could not. Like, and I was like, do you know what? I started saying to myself, if I miss sleep, it's gonna be more detrimental to me than eating that tea cake.
Yeah,
and I got that tea cake.
Amazing, we justify it to ourselves somewhere or other,
isn't
it?
Somehow. But the idea, as I say, like, your breakfast and your meals and all, like, that had to be a booster. Were you like, you know what, I'll do a few more meals and then I'll have some dinner and then I'll do
And I brought quite a similar subject. I brought I put together these little like packets of chocolates, like with like celebrations and heroes and Quality Street or roses or whatever, mixture of everything, you know. And I was like, every 7 days I'll have them and I'll have something to look forward to. Gone after about 5 weeks. Like, I was searching out. I had 90 days worth of food, so they were there. And I cannot describe. They were just little drops of heaven, man. Like, especially the dairy milks, just the pure chocolate. You know,
I just
rested on my tongue, and I'd be kind of, say there was about 12 or 14 of them in the packs, I'd be like, right, I'll have 2 at breakfast, then I'll have 3 at lunch, and then I'll have the rest. I mean, they'd be all gone by breakfast. Like, I'm just looking at them as I'm rowing, going, like, they're calling me, like, you know, I just one more. Yeah,
I mean, there's an advertisement for it. That would have been for dairy milk there, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
and a bit of dairy milk talking to them on the side of the boat, you know what I mean? Rub me all over yourself, Damien.
It was talking to me, like, come to me, take me.
Oh, yeah. I'd say it's mad how chocolate can mess with your mind at this. Stop talking to me! to the bags of chocolate.
Oh, so good.
Like, and so, you got to the halfway point. Was it a halfway point or was it a good way point? Because then you had that situation where, like, and as I was saying to you before we even start recording here, when that happened that day, even before that, Christmas Day, I remember being like, nearly witching you. I had a drink and all of you on Christmas Day.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I said again, jeez, I was thinking, and it was, I think it was cold, it was a cold day we had on Christmas Day, and I remember thinking to myself, like, I couldn't imagine, like, being in the ocean now, the wind cutting your face, the splash of water, like, that kind of, I know that I sound like probably the biggest pansy in the world there, like, you know what I mean, but like, he's like, for the water, but like, that, on Christmas Day, you're obviously thinking about that day before you go out.
Yeah, Christmas Day was day 11, so early enough in the expedition, you know, so Yeah, like if you think of the whole crossing in general, like there's one day that sticks out when that, you know, before you start that you're going to be kind of conscious of, and it's Christmas Day, of course, like, because, you know, the situation is absolutely bizarre. You know, fucking, you know, I was about that stage, probably 500 miles from shore, like, you know, so.
In 11 days?
Probably around that,
that's
yeah.
That's incredible bleeding time, isn't
it? I was thinking around that anyway, roughly. Because and of course there's an issue with that as well, because after 500 days you're out of reach of helicopters for rescue and that, so that's another thing you're thinking of. But you know, Christmas Day, it's just like a milestone, and you, it's a day that actually was really good, for want of a better expression, like, because I left the sat phone on all day. There was like phone calls coming through, messages from people like you wouldn't even expect, you know. And there's a lot of people with you on the boat that day. The conditions were really good. The sunrise was absolutely incredible.
Looked beautiful. Yeah. If you get a chance, go to Damien's Owlstock, isn't it, yeah, on Instagram. And some of the pictures are absolutely. If you want to see a sunrise or a sunset in the Atlantic Ocean. That happens every single day, and no, not many people get to see it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just out of this world. I made a little video for my family and sent that to them really early, and then got rowing for like, for whatever, a few hours, and then you know, and then like I said, phone calls were coming in and texts, and conditions were really good. The boat was flying along, so yeah, I was just buzzing all day, man. I was in really good form, but then of course, with the highs come the lows, man. The next day, nobody's ringing you. I absolutely crashed, like, you know.
Everybody hung over. Like, yeah, get that home.
Pubs are back open. Nobody gives a shite again. Like,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
everyone in the pub now.
Yeah,
like, Jesus, Damien. Oh, Jesus, he was a great fellow. He was a great
fellow.
Who? Fella.
Oh yeah, Damien. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was a great
yeah. So yeah, I flew along that day, but and then kind of conditions started to get really big then again, and then on day 14 that was the capsized day.
So you capsized, yeah. And so you have to tell me about that, because that was a day you remember being like, so you have Christmas Day on the 11th and then on the 14th you're capsized, and I mean, you're probably about what, 700 or 800 miles out now?
About 700 at that stage, I think, around. And yeah, I can unequivocally say the craziest day of my life.
You know, go to Damien's Instagram and you will see his face here. He's busted up on this. He looks like he got a bad out left on Mike Heisen.
Yeah,
I would have been a left, yeah, cause
yeah.
I would have been a left, yeah.
So can you imagine, like, you're fast asleep and
is it dark? Is it really dark inside the boat?
What time was that? It was 7 a.m. so it was probably greyish, for want of a better expression. Yeah. It was like, yeah, there was all sorts of the sunrise was kind of like there was different specific periods to it, you know, so it's dark and then you can kind of see it getting lighter and grayer. So anyway, I was fast asleep, didn't know anything about it at this stage. Massive conditions, like 7, 8, 9 meter swells, like, and basically boom, I wake up when my face hits the side of the cabin. Basically what happened was the boat was like sideways to the waves, and I just got hit with a huge wave and just turned me over 360 degrees. So yeah, I just got catapulted, or a sonic boom basically, into the side of the cabin, and smashed at my head, just all around my left eye here. And yeah, and if you can imagine, you're trying to decipher in like nanoseconds what the hell's going on, like, so what the hell was that, what's this pain, and then the boat is turning over 360 degrees, so you're in a washing machine basically at the same time. And then I felt that kind of familiar trickle of the warmth of blood, you
yeah.
know. I'm like, oh, I've capsized and I've smashed my head, and you're trying to process what the hell to do next, you know. So as the boat's going over, I'm like, okay, so you need to stop the blood, or maybe the boat's gone over and self-righted at this stage, and you need to stop the blood. And then like everything in the cabin, like, so I've all netting that holds kind of stuff I need every day, you know, down to even my toilet basically is in there, and that's all on top of me, the bedding's on top of me, there's some water coming in, so it's absolutely pandemonium, and you're just trying to kind of calm your mind or figure out what you're doing and calm down and just process what needs to be done next. So thankfully the cuts weren't too
a little bit of water
and I hadn't, you know, you're that's panicking that because you don't know why it's coming in. So thankfully it was just through a tiny little hole in the bottom, which is for the water maker, you know, so
yeah.
it just got in anyway, but it wasn't any anything major. So yeah, I remedied all that, stopped the bleeding, remedied the cabin, and then just went outside onto the deck, and I'm just sitting there like, and I'm kind of, you're a little bit like disorientated, as you can imagine, a little bit in shock. And I came out in the cabin, the whole thing was full of water, so I was pumping, bucketing that off, and I turned on the bilge pump, which automatically pumps it off. And I just hear this noise and I look to my right and I see the dorsal fin of a whale. I presumed it was a whale at the time, and it was a whale. I was like, fuck. And then it came around the boat and then swam around the boat five or six times, and then one of its circles, it was on my right hand side, it stuck its head up and made eye contact with me with its left eye. And I'm like going, man, this is fucking unbelievable.
I'm gonna eat my fucking whale.
Nobody is going to believe this either. Like, you know.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
man.
Incredible. Like,
and
I
was
mean,
it like, you know what type of whale it was?
I don't. I think it was a minke whale, and it was only, it was an adolescent, I'd say, because it was quite small for a whale, like probably 14 feet or something like that. But it nuzzled the back of the boat, and then it swam around on its last, and on its last circle, it swam right beside the gunwale or the side of the boat. And if I had had the bravery or the wherewithal to reach over, I probably could have touched it. You know, that's how, like out of this world stuff, like.
That's a moment. Like, you had to be sitting there, like, that's a life. Like, that really is what it's about, isn't it?
This thing is like trying to communicate with you.
You know what
basically,
I mean?
Like, it's a high form of intelligence, and it's trying to say something to you, or play with you, or just curious, or something, man. And as the day went on, actually, that was a real sketchy
feels
day.
It's like you out there, like, in a way, like, that's out there.
Yeah.
What's going on? Like, just once. Connection, like.
That's the feeling I got, like, because I don't know if I was playing games with myself that day, but I was rowing along, and it was a real sketchy day, really unbelievably stressful, as I'll go into in a minute. But I was sure I spotted the dorsal fin again a couple more times, like it was following me or something, or just, you know, I was like, that he's trying to tell you something, man. And because I was going through such craziness, I was like, what does he know that I don't know, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
pardon me, like,
yeah, no, because like 6 hours later, or 6 or 7 hours, I was after the capsize, I was having awful trouble with my steering, so I was trying to fix my steering, which meant that I was kind of in a very unusual position on the boat. I was crouching down underneath my my foot plate is basically where I had my feet for steering, you know, and I lost the power, and I was trying to see what was wrong. And just because in that position of a crouch, I kind of just came out of it just because everything was burning or whatever. And I looked, just seemed to catch something in the corner of my right eye, and I just looked up and I saw this massive wave that I was kind of on the face of. So I was breaking at the top, so it was right, and I was like, oh, you're gone here. So I somehow grabbed a handle, or somehow had the awareness just to grab a little handle which is on the hatch behind me, and basically the boat got turned over and I went into the water. And my first thought was, wow, that water's warm. It was like really warm, like bat water, you know. And no worries. And it was like just time slowed down. I mean, it was like slow motion, and I was like just underwater, hanging onto the boat with one arm going, just squeeze your grip, squeeze your grip, squeeze your grip, and just having that, like, again, that awareness and concentration to be able to do that when, you know, basically you're, could be, you know, if you let go, like, that's it, man, you know.
You're going to be separate, and the wave in there, because then I was looking up at a bit of stuff and all when I was thinking of you out there, like, the separation can happen so fast between a boat and someone that's
it's gone, you're gone, the boat's gone one way, you're gone the other.
And the thing,
you know,
is, the more you chase it, it'll actually
that's if you can't chase it.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I can't swim, so I'm big fucking shit, man. If
you're shitting me.
No.
You are shitting me.
I could probably swim like 20 meters, but I sink, so. So I don't even have the capabilities to.
There's no bottom. Like, it's not like a swimming pool then.
No, I
sink.
Is it not?
No.
Nobody told
me. You know, but it's not like someone's coming in to get you. You went out across the Atlantic Ocean and you cannot swim.
Yeah.
You were fucking mental, man. You were mental, man.
Now, all this been said and done, I had like my harness on and I had a tether to the boat, but like still you can only control what you can control, and you never know what's going to go wrong with that. So like I came round basically the 360 degrees with the boat, and then I kind of just got fucking thrown onto the deck again, head first basically. I'm never so glad. I was still clutching onto the thing, like, I mean, with my kind of some sort of superhuman strength, like.
But
and
that
I just
would have been
went
in that moment, just saving your life at that
moment. Yeah, exactly.
Like, your arm would come off before your hand would probably give way.
Completely pull the shoulder out of the socket or something. Yeah. And I just remember going, holy fuck, did you just do that? Like, you know, did you just have that kind of, same word again, awareness to be able to do that and be able to, you know, concentrate on like that one singular thing, even though, you know, basically, you know, it was, you know, complete pandemonium and like, you know, survival of the fittest. So, yeah, it's definitely my most vivid memory of the whole thing, you know, the whole you know, just the way it was so slow, like, and it was just so clear and what I had to do. I had visualized that sort of stuff happening, and I had visualized doing that, but not in that scenario. And then you don't know,
yeah,
you have no idea. Like, okay, it's all well and good sitting at home or sitting in the water and Silver Strand visualizing it, but like, until you go through it, until you take the action, then the action was so precise and like efficient to me. I was like, holy shit, man, that's powerful. Yeah,
I'm proud of yourself.
Yeah, completely, like, surprised and proud and just like, I was just like in awe nearly of kind of what I did, you know. So, and I know that sounds terrible, but
the visualization, I think, does that. I think visualization really, because even a lot of the guys, they say in the fight, like, even after it, they're like, what happened? I can't remember. And it's like, I think visualization does that. Yeah. It can kind of put you into a moment where if you visualize it so much that, even when you would have quit, your body just says, look, go away, mind. And it takes control, I think. You know, because it's being how you come back out the other side.
You've lived the moment before because you've visualized it so vividly, you know, and
it kind of gets rid of the human for a second, and it just deals with what you visualized and what you've put the plan in, and then you come back into being nearly a human.
It was crazy, man. Like, I mean, that's why I say it's probably the craziest day of my life.
So in the same day, you capsized in the night, you seen a whale
and another capsized
hanging on the deck, boat. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
And then I nearly went over three more times that evening, like the boat, the waves just didn't have enough power to push me over. So I was like 45, 60 degrees to the actual surface, or the boat was that degrees, and it just didn't have the power. So it'd come back into its normal position. But like, so The reason was because when the steering was giving me issues, the boat just goes sideways to the waves instead of being kind of with them, you know, and in following seas. So I was constantly rowing along, looking over my right hand shoulder, going, oh, is this one going to put me over? And I'm going up the face, you know, kind of going, is this one going to break? Is this the one that's going to put me over? So,
thanks, I mean,
the stress was just crazy. Like, I climbed into the cabin. I rang the boat builder. I said, what the fuck can I do? Like, he goes, you have to put out a thing called a drogue. It's like a windsock, and it sits out the back of the boat, and it keeps you, the way it's designed, it rights the boat and it keeps the boat in line with the wind and the waves. So he says that will minimize your chance to capsize. And so I put that out around 8 o'clock, climbed to the cabin and just slept. I mean, just fried mentally and physically from the day, like, and everything I'd gone through. I slept for like 12 hours or something crazy, really? In huge conditions, like, still in these conditions, but at least now I was rolling with the waves, you know what I mean, and I was kind of going up them, and I had much a lesser chance of being capsized.
So you can really get the rhythm of it when you are not being able to get the rhythm of the thing, and then you can kind of even feel the safety in there, I'd say.
Just felt safe, yeah, and the cabin was a little refuge as well, so once that was locked down, like, you know, you did feel, like, the difference. I know it was only like, there was about a meter between the two places, but like, the difference between inside the cabin and outside, like, to your mental state was like night and day. I mean, one was like your sanctuary, and the other one was like, well, fucking get ready to hang on with your fingernails.
Like a cave, looking away. You're going back that cave, away. That's your cave, and the angels on the outside.
That's a good way. I never thought of it like that, yeah.
But that's an incredible kind of thing to put your mind through in these day and age, you know what I mean? Because this is probably the most human safe time, I think, you know what I mean? Where if you want to really be sheltered, you can be. But to take yourself out of your comfort zone and put yourself back into kind of
survival mode is
incredible, you know what I mean? And do you think that, I'd say after that, you were like, nothing can break me now.
I thought so. Until day 17. And then, because between day 14 and day 17 was like just constant. I was going nowhere. I was only getting about 20 or 30 miles a day because I was fighting and trying to fix the steering every day and questioning everything and completely, like, mentally just, it was doing my head in, like, because again, this is a race, and like, you want to get as fast
and across as fast as
and
you want to live
you know, if you're going to do something, you want to do it properly, and like, I just feel like this is taking so much of my what I wanted out, well, not what, it's just bothering me so much every day because I'm not getting the most out of my days. So I was trying to fix it nearly every morning, and then basically what was happening was like, I'd just go fuck it and I'd roll.
The fucking attitude always pays off.
Yeah. And then day 17, I was again onto the boat builder. I said, listen, I have the facility where I can send little videos. So what I'm going to do, because we were arguing over it. He was saying this can't be a problem with the steering from the capsize. It makes no sense.
And I'll fucking show you.
I was like, I'm just trying to explain it to him. And I was like, listen, I just feel powerless. Basically, the way I could describe it was like power steering. You lost the power in a power steering in a car, and then you've only got like 25 degrees of kind of movement in the wheel. So, I mean, I just felt like it was the most useless thing in the world, or I was useless, and or something like that. So, day 17, I said, listen, in the morning I'll take a picture or a video and I'll send it to you, and you can let me know what you think, because this is not right. I mightn't be an expert in ocean rowing boats, but this isn't right. I just know it's not. And I woke up in the morning, opened the hatch, and the thing was in bits. I mean, it had broken overnight. It had finally snapped.
The steering? Like,
yeah, the steering. There was a rod, basically, that went up underneath the footwell, and that had eventually, the weld on the rod had snapped for whatever reason. So
That's just a little paddle, isn't
that's
it?
That's it, exactly, yeah. That's all, yeah. So I moved my foot left or right to steer the rudder at the back. There's two lines attached to it that go down the side of the boat. So so then I was like, fuck, man. Like, I heard stories of one guy in particular who lost his rudder, and just like, I mean, it makes an already very difficult endeavor 10 times more difficult, because it now becomes a real, not only mentally, but it becomes really, really taxing physically, like, because you're trying to steer the boat with the oars. So
what
you'd have to do basically is crank down off one side, and you're holding the oar in the water, you know, and you're getting tons of pressure from the water rushing against it. So it's an isometric hold on one side, and then on the other side, then you're rowing to try and bring the boat back in, trying to bring the cabin in line with the winds and the waves, because remember, you go sideways on otherwise. So, and then what would happen was, what made this really difficult was, you'd get it back to the, you'd get the cabin back in line, and you would have it straight with the wind and the waves, and you'd only have about 5 or 6 degrees leeway. So if the cabin at the back went 5 degrees that way, the wind would just blow you down again, or that way. And it would take a good 3 minutes to bring it back. Like, I mean, really hard work. You'd be panting at the end of it. And like, and when that happens to you 5 or 6 times in a row, man, it is seriously demoralizing. And
you just throw an oar away, and
you're just sitting
scream.
At the bottom of the waves, nearly crying, like, just going, why is this so fucking hard? Like, so day 17 then was a huge kind of turning point in the difficulty of the row, you know. But after that, then it all got easy.
I'd say the visual of some of the waves you've seen were incredible. I'd say, look, because people do talk about these waves that just come up out of the ocean sometimes, and it's like, they were 7 stories high.
Mm-hmm. No, they were.
Really, yeah.
I'm rowing along a lot, especially in those first 2 weeks, and the amount of times you're just looking up, going, because you're facing these waves, you know, and you're just, I just go, mountains. Mother of God, look at the size of that thing.
Yeah, that's
just
enormous. They're the waves that I'd love to see a wave like that, but no. You're like, no, you wouldn't, Paddy. Watch what happens when you see it.
Virtual reality will be out pretty soon, man. It'll be all good, yeah. You can.
But the idea of that, like, is, I can imagine that is breathtaking, like, to see something like, nearly like a mountain come up out of the water.
I was reading I took a little journal, and I took video diaries as well, and I was reading one of my journals, and I'd forgotten about this, because there was one point one day where I just got up onto the top of one of these kind of huge massive rollers, and I just, for whatever angle the boat was, I was able to look over my right hand shoulder, and I was just seeing this, like, I mean, the tunnel, just the timing and everything, and the tunnel of the, like, the wave, you know, for like, as far as the eye could see, you were sitting on top of it just for that split second. Like, it's absolutely incredible.
Like, you know that you're
at the peak of the ocean at that stage, you know, and just the way the angle and the time I spent just there, and the whatever way I seemed to look over my right hand shoulder, I just saw this kind of mind blowing kind of vista, if you want, you know, because it's all peaks and troughs, you know what I mean? So that time was just at the peak of it. And, yeah.
I'd say that the old seasickness kicked in was well gone after that, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, no, it was well gone. Thankfully, mine only lasted like 12 hours or so on day one. And that was just a case of rowing. And I mean, I just lean over the side, get sick, row, get sick. And yeah,
like a hungover car journey.
A little bit, yeah. Very, very much like a real bad hangover. I'd heard stories of lads lasting for 7 days. I heard horror stories of it, so I was mentally prepared for it to last longer. So when it was gone, and I didn't take any medication or anything, I was like, you know, pretty happy with things. It was gone pretty early, and once you get over it, you're grand. You know, you don't get it again or anything like that.
And you didn't get the trots around out there?
I didn't think we were going to get into this, but
I have to ask.
So you know, like we it's bucket and chuck it basically. You sit on a bucket and chuck it over the side, like. Mm. So you get to see everything that's coming out, man. I've never seen, you know, turds this long in all my life. I mean, I swear to God, man, some of them were like fucking 2 foot long, man.
The fuck,
crazy, craziest thing I've ever seen.
Having two foot turds in anyway, the size of it.
They were ridiculous. Like, I was even going, Jesus Christ.
Do you reckon it's gonna be astronaut food, or?
It must have been something like that. I don't know what it was, man. It was bizarre. Absolutely crazy.
Mutant crap at the end of it, putting it in.
One day I was sitting on deck and sitting on the bucket with my pants around my ankles, obviously. You're very vulnerable at that stage.
And this
wave just came out of nowhere and smashed the deck. And I mean, it threw me everywhere, threw the bucket, the contents of the bucket everywhere.
No.
So it was pretty grim, half an hour cleaning that up, man. Yeah.
I can imagine.
Pretty disgusting. Yeah, if you ever want to feel helpless, sit on a bucket in the middle of the Atlantic with your pants around your ankles. Yeah, and watch a 6 foot fucking wall of water coming at you. Yeah, it's not nice.
And were you did you jump out? I've seen one of the ones before you jumped out and had a little swim around.
Yeah, the first swim was around day 29, and I suppose that shows you the ferocity of the conditions we had for that first period, and that was the only time
that's
I kind of felt like
a month's time of being bombarded with raves and being raves in the Atlantic.
Did
anything crazy happen? Like, did you get any, like, did you hear any voices? Did you, like, cause in the silence, remember when I was saying that to you before you going out, like, that idea of, like, I was away in the CC, but just, there's a lot of places out there you can just sit down and literally there's nothing. You can't find that anywhere, but, like, I know that there's not real silence out there because the way, well, it is real silence because that's the sound of, that's the sound out there now.
Yeah, like it's well, speaking of sounds, like you hear about five of them the whole way along, and you're so attuned, you're in that survival state that if you hear anything different, I mean, you're like on it like a second, like, you know, if you're not hearing the roar of the waves, the wind, the water maker whirling and the oars going in the water, the whoosh of the oars, you know, if you hear anything else outside those kind of three or four or five sounds, you're like, I mean, you're just, I mean, dialed in. Like, even to the fact where you'd wake up if you hear something different.
If you hear something different.
It's crazy, crazy state, you know, like, because, again, it's coming back to that just surviving, you know.
Yeah, that primal kind of. Yeah,
exactly. It's a real simple kind of, and if you hear, like, I mean, I remember one day, like, I'd always be listening for, on a big night, the way I stored my oars, like, I'd have to push them into this kind of little hole at the back, the handle of them, and then tie them down, and I'd always be worried that they'd come loose because I lost an oar really early, you know, so I'd know the sound if they came loose, like, and I'd be waiting for it, I'd be listening for something different, and, you know, even if I was asleep, if they had come loose, I'd be on it like a shot, man. I mean, out, gone, tied up again, like, or triple or quadruple knots this time, you know. And that just shows you, like, the kind of, I suppose, the concentration you have on those little details.
You're so tuned in.
Yeah.
So, and how many days did it take in the end?
63.
63 days?
63 days, 6 hours, 25 minutes, yeah. Mm. And, it was, like, I think I did the first half in about 30 days and the second half in, like, 33 or whatever.
But that means your consistency was...
Yeah, it's pretty decent, you know. After I lost the steering, I realized I was kind of down about 10 or 15 miles in what I was doing before a day. So I was kind of aiming to do 40 a day, no matter what. So, like, there was one day where I stayed up 19 and a half hours rowing in 24 hours to get my 40 miles, and I only got 39 or 8 that day, but it was probably the most rewarding 38 or 39 miles I got, you know, because, you know, everything inside you is saying stop, you know, just stop, what are you doing, what's the matter if you get there in 63 days or 64 or 54 or whatever, just crawl in the cabin there and have a little sleep, look how warm it is, you know, and, you know, have a chocolate as well.
This is the voice I'm
the quit voice, you know, but I just persevered and I shut that thing up, man. As Joe Rogan says, I quieten my inner bitch. Like,
yeah,
you know,
was he there forever? Was that voice there?
Yeah, always, man. Yeah, just trying to beat you down,
you
just trying to weaken.
Joe Rogan as well,
I did, yeah,
Joe
incredible, was, yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was that was a big lift when I heard that.
Because
like,
I seen
know.
Your poem and I was like, Jesus,
yeah, it's class, yeah. So But that day, quite been able to quieten that voice and just persevere and get that 38 or 39 miles, and it took me 19 hours of rowing. But like, the easy thing would have been to just not do it, or just kind of justify to myself, listen, just the 30 miles a day will be fine, or 31 miles. But I didn't let that happen, and then that gave me a lot of kind of strength to, you know, after that, you know,
the push is still,
yeah, that I was able to quieten it for so long, like, you know, because other days, you know, I probably only needed 12 hours rowing or 13 hours rowing and I'd get to 40 miles. But it was really important at that stage that I pushed, because I got pushed kind of far south, about 60 miles south in 36 hours. So it was very important that I get north again. I just fucking went to work, man. And
it's mad that miles like that can be just taken off you so easy, isn't it, as well? Mm. Because the sea just does what it wants. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, listen, you don't have, if you don't have any choice in the matter. Like, yeah, I mean, if it wants to do anything with you, she's like,
even the way you talk about it, it's beautiful. You talk about like a difficult girlfriend.
I have so much respect for her.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Or even worse, I wouldn't even say that, more respect, a mother with a wooden spoon.
That's where it comes from.
That's
the
way you talk about it, but you can see it, like, where, like, it's like a personality to see.
Yeah, no, I said in another interview, I was saying, like, she has moods, like, you know, and she has colours, different colours, and you feel like she's just, you know, constantly, like, kind of just below pissed off, you know, grumbling and mumbling, and any second she could explode and just.
This is my girlfriend that I see talking about.
There's a lot of people relating to this right now. Yeah.
How do you know my girlfriend? Yes, but so that you can, I'd say, and it's nearly.
You feel her, like.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I mean. You're getting anxious because you can see it happening.
And you're so vulnerable, like, you know. And,
that,
and
that's
like,
giving me quivers there. That's incredible, that is. But that, as a human, there's so many people, like the amount of people that have lived and never, ever, ever felt them true feelings, you know what I mean? Like the anxieties, I think, that people feel these days are stupid synthetic ones, you know what I mean? I won't say if anyone's anxious, they're anxious, but it can be over, like, it's
trivial
over.
Trivial.
Yeah, like,
stuff.
Does someone like me, like, most people hang their view of themselves on other people, you know what I mean?
Where
that one there, they say, you, the earth, the ocean, if you must, it's a real anxiety. It's the proper cave anxieties that people would have gone through, where a lot of people go through anxieties now, but it's just a recreation of them real ones with stupid shit, if you must, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what am I going to eat? What, people get anxious over this stuff. What if I say that to that person, this person? You know, when you left that all behind and you're out there, you're past the heavy day, so you're over the 30-day mark now. Like, all of that bullshit and stuff like that has to be so beautiful to shed that.
Things become a lot more kind of clear, you know? You got a lot of perspective on stuff and, yeah, like, you kind of realise that, like, yeah, there's so much rubbish, like, out there,
so
you know.
Rubbish.
Yeah. It kind of shortens your fuse for that sort of stuff, like, you know.
This is what I think has had to happen to me the last little while as well. Like, I don't have the time for
it
anymore.
Be around,
you know what I'm saying?
Like,
I just can't be around. I was on my cousin yesterday, and he's training about a year now with MMA, and he's starting to kind of, he used to be a high-level footballer as well, but he starts saying to me, do you know what, Paddy, we're almost going to be friends now, and I just don't like them anymore. Mm. Like, they talk shit about this, and I'm like, I feel like telling them to shut up, and I'm like, don't turn into this bleeding, like, priest mate either, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
I said, sometimes when you go on journey and have experience, and you change. Mm-hmm. I said, and the people around you no longer are the people that you kind of want to be around. You
sure,
know?
Just different
interests. Did this happen? Did you feel this when you came back?
Well, there was one point in particular, I remember sitting around a dinner one night, and just the conversation, whatever kind of way it went into, and it was just rubbish gossip, and I was just sitting there, man, I just can't fucking be bothered with this stuff anymore,
just shut up, you know what I mean?
Like,
that kind
it's
of
so inconsequential to anything I want to have in my life or around me, or so it's just a draw on my energy, and I don't really want to, like, so I was just, and I think that's one thing that's come from the road, that fuse has just shortened a bit, whereas maybe before I would have kind of just ignored what I was saying to myself, or just kind of persevered a little bit, but now I'm like, I can't be bothered with that.
Just turn straight off to it. That's definitely something I've been trying to install in my own life now as well, just that switch off. So yeah, say the first time you're seeing boards. Now I mean boards.
Yeah, unfortunately. I did see one yacht came by on day.
Oh, right. Yeah,
and it was full of women. And I was like, it was just 90-foot beautiful luxury yacht.
Thank you, Lord.
Exactly.
I knew you would save me.
It's like Father Jack, you know, he gets picked up by the yacht with the birds on it. I was like, very similar to that, man. That's completely dishevelled.
I'd say the girls on board were like,
yeah, they're all
as well. Look at you, Damien, out in the middle of nowhere, top off, wind in your hair, your beard,
savage beard.
Yeah, like.
But I was just looking at them going, because it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, this yacht. Like, it was, I'd say it must have been, you know, €1 million kind of. It was bringing it across to Antigua or whatever. And they were all like, I think there were a lot of them were like drinking champagne and in bikinis. And there I am, like, fucking disheveled, like a fucking caveman, you know. And just going, yeah, you wouldn't mind swapping. And they all knew my name because they've got internet on board. So they were able to find out who it was. They're like, Damien. Please don't.
Please don't call me.
I don't need this right now, you know.
Oh no.
Yeah. See you in Antigua. You will see me in Antigua.
Yeah,
you have no idea. Yeah, I'll hunt you down.
Yeah, this has to be the time. That had to be the time. You clipped one off. When everybody disappeared and
no, it had to be done along with the chocolate. It had to be done as well.
The chocolate and self molestation.
Yeah, those are my my vices for the trip. Yeah,
definitely, 100%. You know, put a man in sea and he's just going to be a man anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd say that had to be. That, I never realised that it was like that. I thought the boat went buoyant.
They made a beeline for me, like, because there was one guy on the boat.
You're a handsome man as well, David.
Well, I didn't want to say, man, but no, they were like, there was one guy on the boat who wants to do the race, and they just, I suppose it's just a fascinating thing to see. Imagine there's 20 of them on this yacht, beautiful yacht, and it's hard enough for having a great time, and then they kind of, this guy throws up on the radar and they know it's an ocean rowing boat. Like, you'd just be curious, wouldn't you, to go by and see what the hell he's doing, like, you know. So I could see them coming for about 6 miles, and they're like, oh, they're coming right at me. They're still coming right at me. Oh, they're coming to see me. I realized the penny dropped.
Pirates or something like that.
I wasn't sure. Well, it was called Anne, so I was like, a boat called Anne, pirates.
Yeah. Hey!
Yeah.
Was there many blokes on the boat?
There was a few blokes. It was about, I'd say it was about 15 or 20, and they were all just crewing it, just bringing it across. And I suppose some of them were working and some of them weren't, so they were enjoying themselves. And yeah, they were out the front, and they circled me about 3 times, and I was trying to shout to each other. I could hear them shouting. They're like, can't hear you. I was like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't want to hear what I'm saying anyway. And then they took off, and then I know they saw another solo the day after, which was actually, that was Christmas Eve. So on Christmas Day, then they saw another boat. So that was the only birds, as you know, female birds. But there was plenty of bird life.
I said this to them. So you're not gonna have it for the whole time you're going on.
I know,
you're
I
dealt with. Now, see, I told you.
Yeah, I know.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Never close down the hatch.
I didn't think I'd be within any earshot of even.
Now that would have been a story, wouldn't it? Let me tell you a story, Paddy. You came on.
Yeah.
And I climbed up on board of
you. You know, we threw rope out, and you know.
There was no males for 100 miles. It was just me. That's incredible.
Yeah,
that's
amazing. Pretty cool. Yeah.
And they didn't throw a bottle of champagne down there. No,
nothing like that.
And now Christmas Day.
See, they can't really come too close because obviously they create a big wake, you know. Yeah. So they came as close as they felt safe enough to do. But then they pushed on, and in regards to bird life, then there was quite a bit of birds the whole way across.
What,
you know,
the whole way across, yeah.
And I'd use it as a time to actually use my voice, like, and have a conversation. So, hello, Mr. Bird, you know, how are you today? Yeah, kind of stuff like that. Yeah, going crazy, basically.
Yeah, that's all right. And any bird land on a boat or anything like that?
No, it didn't land all right, but there was the same bird for like at least kind of month or so, and then we started seeing a bit of variety, you know. So, they just kind of, they're again curious. They'd sweep by and you'd see one circling on top of you, and then it'd be gone again.
Wait, they eat your name, and I'm thinking, hanging around here for a
vultures.
Minute. There's not much left, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I'd say the idea when you're coming into your last, like, 2-3 days, like the idea of getting home. Well, you say you're sick of being a sea at that stage. You know what I mean? You're done with it then.
Yeah, well, like it's constant hardship, you know. And at the start, obviously, it's not too bad. But as you're going along, your body starts to deteriorate and deteriorate. So towards the end, you're really in a bad way. You know, I had really bad issues from day kind of 24-5 with sea sores and pressure sores. So just from sitting in the same position and the weight for so long. So, you know, if you can imagine sitting on glass or sandpaper and then having to do that for 12 hours a day, you know, and you still have kind of 1,000 miles to go, it's psychologically very, very difficult.
Salty water and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, and towards the very end, then I think, say, if I make sense by saying, from kind of 6 days out to kind of 3 days out, we had huge conditions again. Got really, really windy, and really wet and cold. So some of those mornings were possibly the hardest mornings, or the hardest of the whole thing.
At the end?
At the end, because I was still working off on Spanish time, even though I was 4 time zones ahead. So I was getting up at 7 Spanish time, but it was 3 basically in the morning there. So I had a lot of dark to row through, you know, until the sun came up. So all those hours and hours, and then with these huge conditions, and we get these things called squalls. So they're like they're just like a curtain of rain, like a curtain of monsoon rain that just sweeps by, and some of them will take like 30 seconds, some of them will take 7 or 8 minutes, you know. I remember one morning in particular, because if it's 3 or 4 in the morning, it's pitch black, so you can't see the curtain coming, so you just hear it as it hits the end of the boat. Yeah, and then you're like, oh fuck. So I just remember really quickly zipping up my top, pulling my buff down, and I had a beanie on, and just tucking my chin in like that, and just sitting there for about 6 minutes as I got absolutely saturated. I was just going, man, this is so grim.
This is the
I could just do with this, been over now, you know.
Yeah.
And because you know you're not going to get any sort of heat on you for another 5 or 6 hours, you know. You're just going to be sitting there in your wet clothes, and you know, before that, in the mornings, before you even come out, you're pulling on wet clothes, like all your clothes are wet. So, you know, you just got out of the only kind of dry place on the boat, your bed, and you're pulling on wet kind of bike cycling shorts and wet kind of it's really grim, man. And then you're going out into this madness of like just this kind of wild place of wind and rain and waves, and you're like, oh Jesus, I could do this, been over.
And it's for pretty hours as well. Like, yeah. You know, like you're going to be like servicing that deck for hours and hours and hours. And that'd be that. Like, they, not being warm would that, but like, the only time you would be warm, I'd say when you appreciate heat is when that sun is coming.
Oh, it's so good, man.
What does that feel like?
The sun on your back. I mean, I took loads of videos, like I'm talking into a lot of them, and I'm like just going, you can't believe how, you know, how much that sun means to you. Just feeling it on your shoulders, and you can literally feel it from when it comes up. You can feel it the whole day go around you, you know, on different parts of your skin, and it's stronger on because of the angle it is, like, and it's your lifeline, you know. It's like
incredible.
Yeah, you can tell the time of day by the position it is by the end, just because, you know, you're so attuned to kind of its movements and that, and you can tell by the focal point it has on your skin. Oh, it's kind of 4 o'clock now, because it's kind of here.
That's
mad.
You,
like,
that's why people used to tell the thing, but I think, like, as Kay, like in them times, say early humans, like that. That's the find you rather than you finding out it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like all of a sudden, every just, day, the sun is in
just the learn it by, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Learn
it.
Well,
yeah.
If we don't go here now in a certain time, it's going to be dark then. And like, you a self correcting mechanism, if you must, you know?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have a clue, like walking around normal, like every
you
day.
Reckon,
like,
you reckon if you hadn't got a clock, that you would have been able to figure out some sort of time system?
Absolutely, yeah.
By the sun.
No problem.
It would have just found you, wouldn't it?
He would have found me, yeah, yeah. No, just by, you know, being under the sun for, you know, hours and hours every day, I knew exactly what time it was. I used to go, so I take a break around kind of 10:30 sometimes for like 30 minutes, and I'd know the exact angle in this of where the sun was for it to be 10:30, you know, towards the end, kind of days 50s. And I wouldn't even have to look at a clock.
I'd say when you take an awful lot of the other bullshit out of your life as well, that becomes like God, if you must. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've said this to people before, like, the idea of sun. The sun is what made people look towards the sky and look towards, like,
question
the, yeah, differently. And yeah. Like, where the sun is kind of basically God. It gives life, it gives heat, it gives good feelings. It gives all the stuff that you're on about there. Mm. When the darkness is there, and people talk about the darkness, and you invite God into your life or whatever it is. Mm. It kind of is. It explains to me what early humans would have, where they got these predations and where a lot of this, the beliefs come from. You can imagine coming out of that darkness, that wetness, yeah, that horrible, I hate my life. And then the sun comes up. So and it's like, just, you know better than anybody.
So yeah, I was like, you're just waiting for it to come, and you're like, oh man, hope that cloud gets out of the way so I get a proper shot at the sun, you know what I mean? And yeah, I just, when I look back at some of the videos, I'm just going, man, I, you know, I choose to be in a good form, and I always say, listen, the sun is out, the heat is on my back, and like that just makes such a change in your energy and in your outlook on the day, yeah, you know, once the sun is out, like, you know, because it's, yeah, it just you know, it feels like it's giving you life.
That's life. Yeah. You can imagine what that feels
pouring
like.
Pouring it into you.
Just like somebody that knows, like, that would have known nothing else. What a mad experience. The sun coming up and the sun going down and the feeling of it. And of course, that is the creator. That's the powerful, I think, with the sun, because you're so close to it as well in the sea, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're pulling in. So say, that day before the last day, you're kind of like you're going, you're good to get home now. You just want to get home. You're pulling into the
marina.
Marina.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's this like?
It drags, like
even that long.
It drags a lot. Those last kind of, well, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours coming into the island, you're like, you're never really getting any closer.
Never, yeah. And you're wondering, am I going to make it today or is it going to be tomorrow?
Yeah,
is it,
yeah? I had all sorts of stress as well about the approach because I lost my sat phones in those really bad conditions I was telling you about, just to water. And I.
Both sat phones, so both you were kind of left on your own then?
I was on my own, and then I had my actual iPhone that I was taking videos on was dead at that stage, and the chargers were all finished. So basically, the only way I could communicate was through the VHF radio. But like as a solo, you can't leave the hatch open on the cabin because water can get in. So you have to close that. So it's very hard to hear the VHF radio, and you're just trying to get closer. So I didn't really have a lot of communication. I told the ABSAR, which is the local search and rescue, that I was within 20 miles of the island, and so they were conscious of me and they were watching me. So I always knew eyes were on me. Yeah, but
that's a nice feeling as well.
It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, oh, thank God it's not just me on my own anymore, there's somebody else kind of there if something goes wrong. So but I see all these waves, like, and all the conditions really good those last couple of days, but they were pushing to the island and you just see these waves crashing on the island. So I was like, fuck man, I've not come 3,000 miles to end up on the bloody rocks, you know. So I said, I was like, just stay out here and a little bit further from the island, and then when I get round, so you have to approach Antigua, so basically you're kind of coming from the north and you have to get round to the south of the island and then go into the marina. I was like, I'll get a visual on it and then I'll kind of just go straight for it. But like ABSAR, finally they sent out they guide you in, you know, but they couldn't find me for ages because I was so far out. So they finally came out to me going, what are you doing out here? You need to go due north ASAP. So I had to kind of put down the hammer then for like 20 minutes straight row kind of due north to get in close to the wall, which I thought was dangerous because well, when you train on the west coast of Ireland, everyone's like, do not go anywhere near the shore, like, because you just end up on the rocks because these winds are so susceptible to, or these boats are so susceptible to the wind. So so then once they came and guided me, it was a big relief, you know, because you feel a much safer then, you know, because I was stressing out there for the last kind of 7 or 8 hours kind of going, am I going to fuck this up right at the end?
The
like, what a
thing.
Disaster that would have been.
And it changed.
Because that has happened to boats in the past. Yeah.
They had got stuck, they went all that way.
All the way, imagine, and then ended up on rocks. And then that's not a crossing. If you're not in control of the boat, like if you just wash up, it's not an official crossing. Like,
really?
Yeah,
even
though I'm pretty sure you'd be happy enough with it yourself.
You're like, I'm grand.
I'll count that as a crossing.
And
yeah,
visually, you had an incredible change, like, you know, physically, like.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
You went straight back from ordinary man to the caveman in a few days. Like, if the world turns into like if the world stands still or the snowstorm happens again, I think you missed that, did you?
I did. Yeah.
Missed the snowstorm. So if that happened, you can imagine people looking like you in 6 or 7 weeks. Like,
yeah, it was serious deterioration. Like, I looking back, you kind of looked like 10 years older as well.
Yeah, you looked like you could see that years would have been coming off your life if you kept in that stress.
Yeah, the stress of it all. Yeah. yeah, the survival mode, you know, the, you know, you're constantly just fucking in this really strange heightened state of concentration, you know. I mean, because you have to be, you know, if you make the slightest mistake at any time, like, that could be it, you know. So you have to be dialed in, like, and you just do it, like, naturally, you know. You're just fucking, I mean, when I'm rowing in those big conditions, I'm just looking at what the waves are doing, and I have to react to them, you know. So time passes really quickly in those situations, but when it's calm and there's no real stress on the boat, you're just rowing along, then that's when time really, really drags, and then that's when you kind of get into that's when it's really easy to get into negative mindsets. Yeah, no, I was like, fucking, of course you had the big kind of 70 or 80 days of growth, because I don't think I'd shaved for about a week beforehand, and then I just fucking lost 28 kilos, so nearly 5 stone. I
28 kilos,
and that's when I'm eating 6,000 calories a day. So I can imagine I must be burning close to kind of 12,000-15,000 calories a day, like, you know, fucking kilo, nearly half a kilo a day, like, you're losing.
So say, like, in the idea, if you didn't prepare food-wise, like, you'd just famish. You'd just be dead. Like, Jesus, if you didn't eat the calories, like, think about, if you were losing 15,000 calories a day,
probably, something like that, yeah.
And you're putting in 6,000.
Yeah.
So, like, if you missed that by 3,000 calories, you'd be famished by the time you came back.
Yeah, yeah. God knows what it'd be like, I had a lot to lose because I put on about 10 kilos beforehand, but still, like, I wouldn't want to be going into that not having the sufficient amount of calories on board. God knows what it would do to you, like, you know. But I felt strong, like, apart from day one, I felt strong physically, and I felt I prepared really well for it, and thankfully I prepared in the way I did, with a lot of strength work, because I needed that after the steering went, you know. And that, you know, I can sit here and say that wouldn't be for everyone, like, you know, there was other people in that race, if the steering had gone, like, that would have probably been the end of the race, because they wouldn't have been able to get that boat across.
Well, you were a big lad, so you can imagine, like, some of my size trying to change that, like, no testosterone involved, or
they just wouldn't have the strength to do it, you know. It
was a little breaky. But, like, as I said, it could have happened probably to the best person,
Yeah, exactly.
Are you glad all the little stuff went wrong as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That's the things I remember most. Because
you had to go straight across, and there was no whales,
I wanted that challenge, you know. And I got every bit of what I wanted, and probably a bit more, you know. Like, that's the crudest way anyone could cross an ocean. Like, that's the hardest way you can do it, basically, you know. So, I came through it, and the real satisfying thing for me is the way I reacted in those times of adversity, you know, that I was just really able to get back to what I can control, you know, and into positive places. So I remember after the steering broke, I was saying, like, as long as I've got a boat that floats, a seat and 2 oars, I'm going to get across this fucking ocean. That's, you know what I mean?
I think simplicity is the key, I'd say, in that situation as well.
Exactly, you know.
Don't put too much element on it.
Yeah. Okay. I'd hate to be sitting here and have that deep down feeling that it was a bit easy, you know, and that I wasn't challenged by it.
I love that.
Because, of all my goals for this, I just wanted to be able to look myself in the mirror at the end of it and go, I gave it my all. And I'm just so content that I can do that, you know. That's, I couldn't have got more from it, you know. And even though I was fucking way behind everyone else, but it doesn't really matter, like, you know, when you look back, I think I got more out of it than anyone probably else did.
I think,
you know,
the idea of even racing, it was like racing, it's crazy when you think of, you know what I mean? The idea of, like, that, making across it is a huge factor of it.
Sure.
So when you got there, what the first taste of beer? So say when you've landed, you came in, You some of your family did meet you and stuff like that.
The first taste of beer actually was
coffee or something. So, you know what I mean? Real fizzy drink.
When you're coming in, so basically there's an official finish line, you've officially crossed the Atlantic Ocean, and then you've got another kind of 10-minute row right into the dock where everyone is waiting for you, you know, family and that. But, like, other boats come out, or even people on, like, stand-up paddle boards or ribs, and they kind of, they come in behind you, you know. So there's a couple of Italian lads, I think they had a local restaurant there or something, and they came out and they gave me some sweets and a beer, Peroni or something like that. So I was literally drinking a Peroni before I even got to the dock.
A bit leggy, were you?
Well, I was leggy for different reasons. I got then to the Yeah, you get to the end and then there's a tradition with the race where they give you a cheeseburger, fries and a beer. So you just sit down, the family were there. It's a bit strange, like, because everyone's just, and there's a big crowd around, everyone's just looking at you eating. I feel like a bit of a monkey.
You
like,
go from being nothing, like,
you go from having nobody around you, no noises, stimulus, to just fucking.
So that's what I wanted to ask you about, because anxiety wise, we're nearly there. It's about 10 minutes left and we've got to go, I'd say. So when you stand on land, you hadn't stood on land in 63 days. That had to be.
Do you know what it was like? Best way I can describe it is like, imagine putting your. Remember Gladiators, the Travelator?
Yeah.
It's like putting your foot on that. You know when you see them just go swept from underneath? That's what I felt like. Somebody just swept my leg from underneath
me. You could feel the world move.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Like, and we were not briefed on this at all. Nobody says when you get to the other end, like, you're going to walk like Bambi on ice. Like,
I would have been thinking of that straight away. I would have been, because.
And I couldn't wait to get off that boat. I literally jumped off it, like, get me off this thing, like, and boom, I was like all over the shop. And then I got hit with champagne in the face as well. So I didn't know where I was. Like,
champagne,
my dad had to come over.
Get me back on the boat.
Fell back in. Like, my old man had to come over and give me a tissue. And I think they were worried I was going to go back into the water, you know. So, but like, geez, after that, it was just incredible. Like, you know, just that moment shared with family and just seeing the effect it had on them, you know, big effect on me.
Even
you know,
them
so.
To see you coming back after that. Like, yeah. So, I remember one time, this is not like to do, but I remember coming back to Ireland, being away from a long, long time. And when I was getting on the train, I had this mad anxiety feeling because coming back or something like that. Do you know what I mean? I don't know why, I don't know what it was, but like. Like, all of a sudden, as you said, that has to be a crazy reality. All of a sudden, you're out there for 63 days. It's so calm. It's so bent on you looking after yourself and you looking after getting to the other side. And then all of a sudden, you have people sitting there watching you eating a burger and, like, people talking to you. Did that kind of, like, did it make you, like, want to leave? You know what I mean? Do you get what I mean?
Very over... Like, it's hard to describe it. Like, I was very overwhelmed by, like... Everton, you know, the noises and the people, and that you were the center of attention, you know, and then you kind of felt like you had to do something, and you're kind of like, photographers are saying to you, you're very quiet, and you're like, what, are you fucking serious? Of course I'm quiet, man.
What do you want me to do?
Handstands or something, like, and I don't know, it's really strange.
They're just looking for something to do.
Yeah.
You might have done something bad, you would have reported bad.
Probably,
I don't mind them boys.
I was really, really strange, man. So, yeah, you kind of just want to, you know, sneak away, but of course that's not going to happen, you know.
This is what I was going to say to you, like, though, won't poke in my head more than this. So when you're just going to sit down in a room, close the door on your own, what was that like? That moment of, like,
great, huh? Like,
one land, I made it, I did it. It's a huge achievement. There's only handfuls of people in the world, in human existence, that have done it.
Yeah, you can't process it that quickly, though, you know. I think that's a slow burner, you know. That'll be kind of ongoing for a long time, and maybe I'll have that actual moment or realization. I haven't really had it, you know what I mean? You feel like it's a kind of what's next thing, but like not in a big way. You're like, oh, I'm going out for dinner now, I need to get ready, you know, blah blah. I never really took the opportunity, I just never had that kind of moment where I go, wow, I've done it now, you know. It was more like it just never came, you know, and that's why I took some time in the Caribbean afterwards. I wanted to kind of just travel on my own a little bit and try and kind of reflect and process things, and to be honest, which I don't know if I have, like, and I don't know, it might take a year, it might take 5 years, but
I'd say over your life it'll come
perhaps
back.
yeah Maybe someday I'll just see a photo of it, or, you know, and it'll just all kind of sink in. But yeah, it's really strange. Like, it almost feels like a dream now, to a certain extent. Only when I talk about it, I can kind of really relate, delve back into those little moments, you know. But parts of it have seeped out of me as well, you know.
But like a dream. Well, I don't think you are who you are when you're there, because you're on such sharpness and you're on such awareness. Lastly, I'd say to you, saying before you went, I said to you about Tom Crane and about the idea of them leaving from Elephant Island that time to make it to St. George. They've already done an 800 open boat row across, like, Antarctic seas and stuff like that. So
yeah, crazy.
You would probably be able to kind of, like, tell the idea of what them guys must have went through. Like, that had to be terrible, didn't it?
Well, I can't even imagine the, like, the cold must be just like, of all things, at least I had the sun to look forward to, and I knew when it came up, like, I'm going to get 35, 40 degrees today, and that'll kind of, it just washes away a lot of the discomfort, you know, a lot of the grimness of it all. But I can't imagine what the cold must have been like for those lads, you know. I remember before we went, we had a little talk by a guy called Che Blyde, who was one of two, one of a pair who were the first ones to cross the North Atlantic. Like, they just left from New York one day in a boat, an open rowing boat, and got to the Aran Islands in Galway like 90 days later or really? Something. 1956, yeah. They landed in the Aran Islands. And he was saying that, like, oh, you're off, sure, you have a great, and he's dead right, we do have a great compared to what they went through. He said when they started raining, they used to pull a tarpaulin over their heads, you know. And I was just thinking, man, we have what's coming is going to be hard compared to what these lads went through. Like, you know, imagine, like, we at least we can kind of get into an area that's, you know, safe, in some way safe and dry. Safe, like, yeah. These lads are just sitting out there and holding a tarpaulin over their heads. Like,
that's mad, isn't it? It's mad how human spirit has gone back with it. But Damon, crazy. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having
you're
me again.
Absolute legend, you know that. And you're truly somebody that, like, to sit down and have a conversation with you and to be able to pick your mind on, like, real shit, you know what I mean? The real kind of, like, how feelings, the idea of how your body changes when hard times come, and to put yourself in that situations for challenges is incredible, man. And thanks Dave, because we know people are inspired by that.
Well, thank life is short, huh? Let's not waste any time and get on with the good parts of it.
So no more moaning. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in this week. Look after yourself.
Thanks, buddy. Cheers.